investment at home via tax incentives for companies to build factories in the United States, and government spending on infrastructure and alternative energy to boost demand. The underlying data and the underlying idea of data is that a stronger, more confident U.S. rather than a belligerent one can turn around the narrative that it is a declining superpower, according to multiple advisors who spoke to us on the condition of anonymity. Any rebuilding of the global order is likely to begin with a methodical assessment of where things stand, which will take time and require a certain amount of patience from our allies. Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris have described Trump's trade wars as totally disastrous, and yet they also refused throughout their campaign to pledge to remove the tariffs on imports, ranging from Chinese components to French wines. Advisors say Biden intends to carefully review the tariffs, while he and his team are eager to portray themselves as getting to work quickly, they face applauding reality of American political transitions. Lighthizer's replacement as U.S. trade chief is yet to be named, and Biden's pick will face a Senate confirmation process that will probably take months. That's likely to put on hold any major trade policy decisions until way beyond Biden's first 100 days in office, a period that will be consumed by addressing the pandemic, fighting with the Senate, with a Republican-controlled Senate, and trying to get a new stimulus package through a Congress that is bitterly divided. Top on the list on trade is what to do with China. The president-elect is facing decisions on whether to retain or lift tariffs and national security-driven bans on companies such as Chinese-owned Huawei Technologies Company, as well as whether he wants to build on Trump's Phase One deal with Beijing. How to deal with China is set to color almost everything, including whether to go down the seemingly unlikely path of rejoining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which does not include China. The Trans-Pacific Partnership has long been seen by strategic thinkers in Washington as a way to strengthen the U.S. position in the Asia-Pacific and to help counter China's economic rise. Trump abandoned the pact totally on his first workday in office. Many Asian allies would love for the U.S. to come back. Going forward, we're going to be looking more and more through the lens of China as we pursue trade policy, says Wendy Cutler, who was the TPP's chief U.S. negotiator and now leads the Asia Society Policy Institute. When we choose negotiating partners, when we choose issues that we want to focus on, when we think of restrictions, it's all going to be through the lens of China. For Biden, another inescapable Trump administration legacy related to China is likely to be the scrubbing of the once sacrosanct line between the economic and national security. Sometimes dubiously in his trade and technology battles, including in his assaults on Huawei and other Chinese companies. The erasure of the line between economic and national security, to me, is here to stay, says Jennifer Hillman, a former U.S. trade official who's now at the Council on Foreign Relations and was a policy advisor to the Biden campaign. The incoming administration must also address a brewing trade war with Europe related to long-standing dispute between Airbus SE and Boeing Company over industrial subsidies and plans by France and other countries for a new digital service taxes aimed at American tech giants such as Alphabet Incorporated's Google and Facebook Incorporated. The situation won't be helped by the European Union's decision to go ahead with its own tariffs on imports from the United States, authorized by the World Trade Organization. Attention will also turn toward negotiations with countries such as Kenya and a post-Brexit United Kingdom, though none of those appear close to a conclusion. A slow transition will add further delays to the stalled process of finding a new Director General for the World Trade Organization, where the United States has blocked the installation of Nigeria's Ngozi Onwuko-Iweala, who has the support of most other major members. Advisors to Biden say his administration will want, at the very least, to carefully review Mr. Okonjo-Iweala's record, as well as that of South Korea's Yoo Myung-hee, the Trump administration's preferred candidate. Hanging over all of this is the question of how much room the president-elect will have to maneuver, giving Trump's rewriting of the policies of trade. The answer is quite a bit more than you might think, thanks to Trump. His use of executive authorities contained in the long-dormant statutes to impose tariffs ignored a time-honored deference to Congress on trade. It's something that Biden might choose to do, too. The Section 301 investigation under the 1974 Trade Act that Trump used to launch his China tariffs was based on intellectual property theft. A Biden administration, one advisor says, might consider using the same strategy to deal with Chinese environmental or labor practices. Some Biden backers and former trade negotiators relish the leverage the president has created with the tariffs. Trump has strengthened America's negotiating hand, regardless of who's in power, they point out. Trump and Lighthizer have also shown what's possible on Capitol Hill by prying at least parts of the Republican Party away from the free trade orthodoxy. Philip Levy, a former economic advisor to President George W. Bush, who advised Senator Marco Rubio during the 2016 presidential campaign, points out that the Florida Republican has since embraced a new economic populism, alongside other young Republican senators with presidential ambitions, such as Missouri's Josh Hawley. For decades, the Republicans have carried trade agreements over the finish line, allied with only a small number of moderate Democrats, alienating those in the Democratic Party who felt trade deals left way too many U.S. workers behind. I think it's important for the trading system that we end up with reestablishing a solid majority for the kinds of things we're doing, and that we not keep operating right on the fringe, Lighthizer said in 2017, as he set about renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement. In the process of hammering out an updated trade deal with Canada and Mexico, Lighthizer won influential Democratic allies, ranging from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Senators Sherrod Brown of Ohio and Ron Wyden of Oregon, the top Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee. He also won over a decidedly pro-Biden labor movement. Of course, the bitter divisions in the United States mean nothing in policy will be easy for Joe Biden, particularly if Democrats lose two Senate runoffs in Georgia in January and do not win control of the body. There's also still likely to be some reversion to the mean on trade among Republicans. Cleet Willems, a partner at Aiken Group, who served as deputy director of the National Economic Council under Trump, says the choice is not between a pro-trade pre-Trump Republican Party and one of the America First purists. I hope we can take some of the best of Trumpism and combine it with the best of the old world to develop a trade policy that's hard-edged, but at its core does not see tariffs as the ultimate goal, he says. There are those who also see a lesson relearned on the pitfalls of protectionism. Douglas Irwin, a Dartmouth College historian on U.S. trade policy, argues that future administrations, including Biden's, are likely to pause before using tariffs again, the way Trump has. We had an experiment for 4 years about what it's like to use tariffs on all sorts of objectives, and I don't think it's going to be viewed as a success, that's for sure, Irwin says. And yet, Trump has injected other bigger existential questions into the system. One of his enduring legacies will be the wake-up call for the rest of the world about this notion of American leadership and reliability that he forced them to confront, says Chad Brown, a former member of Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, who's now at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. That's left broad uncertainty about the durability of America's economic relationships, he argues, that will continue shaping business and trade with China and across the Atlantic. The uncertainty will remain even if Biden, in the months ahead, makes the unlikely choice to remove all of Trump's tariffs. Add to that a pandemic that's caused many countries to look inward, and the task of the friendly grandfather sent in to clean up the mess only grows. The global economy's one-time order, it turns out, needs way more than just physical repairs. And that article was written by Sean Donnan and Jenny Leonard. And the bottom line of the article is this: Biden may take months to decide what to throw out from Trump's playbook on trade, but he may even keep and use some of Trump's aggressive actions as leverage. The next selected article from Bloomberg Business Week is Green Cars Won on Election Day Also, subtitled A Biden Administration Could Jumpstart Aid for the Industry's Transition to Electric Vehicles. Although President Obama threw a lifeline to U.S. automakers after the financial crisis, many in the industry were unhappy that his administration was also responsible for fuel economy rules that pushed car makers to their very limits. But the inauguration of former Vice President Joe Biden, who worked hand-in-hand with Obama to set the ultra-tough regulations, will be a welcome event for the industry. And that's because Biden will bring something that manufacturers from Volkswagen to General Motors to Tesla badly need, and that is help selling electric vehicles. Major automakers and startups alike will collectively spend $230 billion U.S. dollars before the end of Biden's first term to bring dozens of EVs to market, according to Alix Partners. That's risky because sales of these clean plug-in vehicles make up less than 2% of the U.S. market, and most of those are made by Tesla Incorporated. President Trump has let a tax credit program for EVs fade away and did little to build out a charging network relying instead on the largesse of states to promote clean cars. For the companies going big into electric vehicles, Biden's plan will help a lot, says Tony Posawatz, who led development of the Chevrolet Volt plug-in hybrid a decade ago, and who sits on the board of EV startup Lucid Motors Incorporated. It takes some of the uncertainty out because you know you're going to get some support. Biden has already outlined a plan that will replenish money for a tax credit that gives consumers $7,500 for buying an electric vehicle, and he wants to build 500,000 charging stations across the U.S. That will help General Motors and Tesla, who have already burned through all of their credits, and enable other car makers to sell more EVs with government help. That's a much-needed shot in the arm for an industry that's building expensive battery-powered cars with little consensus on how many consumers will actually buy them. California-based Lucid plans to sell its $69,000 sedan in 2021. Other startups, including Fisker Incorporated and Lordstown Motor Corporation, plan to sell electric vehicles in the next several years. Investors poured money into a publicly traded special purpose acquisition company, which then acquired Fisker, Nikola Corporation, and others, and took them all public. All of these startups will benefit from Biden's plan. We expect the Biden administration to be more aggressive than the Trump administration was on these matters, says Nikola Chief Executive Officer Mark Russell. As much hype as EVs have gotten, major automakers have been spurred to sell them more by government and investor pressure than true demand. Tesla's sales have grown sevenfold since 2015, on track to hit 500,000 vehicles this year, and about $390 billion market cap tops all of the rivals. But its global production is still less than 5% of General Motors, yet governments in China and Europe are mandating electric drive systems, compelling every company to develop them, and develop them quickly. While future U.S. sales of EVs remains uncertain, automakers plan to offer 121 models in the U.S. market by 2025, according to forecaster LMC Automotive. They will add production for more than 1 million of them by the end of Biden's first term. That's more than four times the number that the U.S. industry sold all of last year. Since electric models there currently sell for thousands more than the $36,000 average sticker price of a gasoline burner, and most lose money while doing it, automakers are more than a little bit nervous, as they should be. The next 4 years are critical for EVs. The industry could achieve cost parity with internal combustion vehicles around 2025, says Ashkay Singh, a partner with PwC Strategy. But that requires building consumer demand and continuing to drive down costs, especially the cost of batteries. That's why an expansion of the tax credits is so important, says Jeff Schuster, president of Global Vehicle Forecasting at LMC. The big winners under Biden's plan would be Tesla and GM. They moved first selling EVs and have used up the maximum 200,000 tax credits awarded to customers in a single automaker under the current program. Both companies are at a disadvantage in the market now, Schuster says, and they could really suffer once rivals such as Ford Motor Company and Amazon-backed Rivian Automotive Incorporated, and a few other startups begin selling electric pickup trucks. We're looking forward to working with the Biden administration and working toward a policy that pushes greater adoption of EVs, says Ken Morris, General Motors Vice President for Electric and Autonomous Vehicle Development. We need to do that at a national and at a global level, he says. Tesla has four models for sale now, and they plan to bring out a Cybertruck and a two-seat Roadster in the next couple of years. General Motors is planning 20 electric models globally, with at least a third intended for sale in the United States. By the end of 2022, General Motors will have the Hummer pickup EV, the Cadillac Lyriq crossover SUV, and a larger version of the Chevy Bolt. With so many new models coming, GM has said it will convert three U.S. assembly plants to make battery-powered models exclusively. Ford and Volkswagen AG will be the next biggest beneficiaries, Schuster says. Ford has its Mustang Mach-E crossover SUV and an electric pickup truck coming soon. VW has several models, and Mercedes-Benz and BMW will also be in the game as they try to steal luxury buyers back from Tesla. The next big turning point will be added to the infrastructure. Industry lobbyists pressed the Biden campaign to include charging in its clean energy plan. Biden's push for 500,000 charging stations would be a huge boost. Researcher Guildhouse Insights has previously forecasted that the United States would have only 66,000 of them by 2025 and maybe 144,000 by 2030. Most people charge at home, says PwC's Singh. But more chargers on American highways will allay some prospective buyers' fear of getting stranded with a dead battery if they buy an EV. I think the inflection point toward electric vehicles is here, and there's no turning back from it, says Mike Jackson, chairman of AutoNation Incorporated, the largest U.S. car dealership. The only issue is, what is the rate of adoption? And that article about EVs was by David Welch. And the bottom line of the article is this. Automakers are expected to sell 121 EV models in the United States by 2025. But the companies say federal tax subsidies will be the key to juicing up consumer demand. A few little newsy briefs to use up my last 2 or 3 minutes here. Pfizer and Germany's BioNTech have said that their coronavirus vaccine has prevented over 95% of infections in a study. It's the most encouraging advance so far in the battle against the virus. The duo said that they will be able to produce 1.3 billion doses of the shot, enough to vaccinate 650 million people by the end of 2021. And we know now that that effort is well underway, with vaccines being distributed around the country and people actually being vaccinated. Coronavirus cases globally have neared 55 million, and deaths have topped 1.36 million. U.S. infections are surging to more than 100,000 every single day. More members of the president's inner circle have now caught COVID-19. On November 9, Carnival Cruise Lines filed to sell $1.5 billion in stock, taking advantage of its surging price amid optimism about a pending vaccine. Still, shares in the world's biggest cruise company are down two-thirds this year. China passed a measure requiring Hong Kong lawmakers to be patriots, the latest attempt by Beijing to squash dissent. Hong Kong's opposition resigned in protest the same day. Political turmoil has erupted in Turkey after President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's dismissed the central bank's governor. Erdogan wants to stem the tide of the lira, the worst performance in emerging markets this year. A day later, Berat Akabrak, Erdogan's son-in-law, resigned as finance and treasury minister, citing health reasons. VF Corporation has agreed to buy streetwear fashion label Supreme for $2.1 billion to bolster its portfolio of apparel and footwear brands. VF also owns the brands Timberland, Vans, and The North Face. And that's it for me for this week. This is Andy Osborne at the TIC Radio Network in Marshfield, Massachusetts, and I've been reading from Bloomberg Business Week magazine. I'll be back in another week to read again for 1 hour from Bloomberg Business Week. Thank you for listening. Stay well, and hope your holidays are just fine. Goodbye.
This week on Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday night movie, Jurassic Park.
I own an island off the coast of Costa Rica, and I've spent the last 5 years setting up a kind of biological preserve.
What kind of park is it?
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
It's a dinosaur.
The park will open with the basic tour you're about to take.
Don't you see the danger, John, inherent in what you're doing here? Genetic power is the most awesome force the planet's ever seen. You wield it like a kid that's found his dad's gun.
These are aggressive living things that have no idea what century they're in, and they'll defend themselves violently if necessary.
Hey, what'd I touch?
I didn't touch anything. We stopped.
Anybody hear that? It's an impact room is what it is.
I can't get Jurassic Park back online.
Yeah, that's nice. Gotta go.
Come on. We gotta get out of here.
The only thing that matters now are the people we love.
Which is just a delay. That's all it is. All major theme parks have delays.
Yeah, but John, if the Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down, the pirates don't eat the tourists.
Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, and Richard Attenborough star in the audio-described Jurassic Park. Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 26 and clear. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 7 a.m.
Because our regularly scheduled program was not available at broadcast time, we bring you the following special presentation.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and brought to you by GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. I'm Kirk Henson with the Georgia Radio Reading Service, and this is Newsweek magazine for the week beginning December the 25th, 2020. On the cover this week is an illustration of atoms and nuclear particles with the caption, "Competing for Quantum. Can the U.S. beat China